All right, good morning. It's a little after 9, so we're going to go ahead and get started. I'd like to welcome everyone to the December 10th, 2024 meeting of the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Quality Control Board. For everyone joining us in the meeting room, please turn off or silence your cell phones. This meeting is being webcasted and recorded, so please speak clearly. This meeting is being conducted in a physical location and is also available via remote access. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available. For those in the Zoom meeting, you will be muted with your camera off until it is your turn to speak. The host will then unmute you and ask you to turn off your camera if you have one. Turn on your camera, excuse me. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute and your camera turned off. You can remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of your item and then may choose to exit the meeting or continue. All right, we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. All right, please repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right, we'll move on to roll call. Madam Clerk.
Chair Satin.
Aye. Or present.
Vice Chair Perez, absent. Board Member Gonzalez, absent. Board Member Beltran Serrano,
present.
Board Member Music, present. Board Member Wright,
here.
Chair Satin, we have a quorum.
Thank you. All right, the purpose of this public meeting is for regional board members to obtain testimony and information from concerned and affected parties within the Colorado River Basin region regarding water quality issues. We welcome hearing from the public at this meeting. Any person wishing to speak should have submitted a speaker request as described in the agenda instructions. For those items listed on today's agenda, you will make your comments at the time the item is being considered. If you wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, you may speak now during the public forum. The comments will generally be limited to 3 minutes. The board clerk can now identify the speakers who have submitted speaker cards for the public forum.
We do not have any.
Okay. We will then move on to agenda item 3, which is review and approval of the minutes from the board's prior meeting on November 12th, 2024. Do I have a motion and a second?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Roll call vote.
Chair Satin.
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano.
Aye.
Board Member Music.
Aye.
Board Member Wright.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. We'll move on to agenda item 4 with a report from the State Water Resource Control Board. Ms. Firestone, the floor is yours.
Hi, good to see you all. All right, I've got a few updates. At our last board meeting on December 4th, we marked the 50th anniversary of the Safe Drinking Water Act and adopted a resolution and celebrated with Senator John Laird's office. And the resolution designated December 16th, which is the official 50th anniversary, as Safe Drinking Water Act Day. It was nice just to celebrate all that we've accomplished over the last 50 years and then double down on our commitment to continue to work towards those goals going forward. We also have been doing a ton on the draft Sacramento Delta updates to our water quality control plan for the San Francisco Bay, San Joaquin Delta watershed. So we have held now 3 workshops, November 20th, 22nd, and December 3rd. And we have one this week on the 12th, and then our final one on January 23rd. To consider staff proposed program of implementation for the Bay Delta Plan update. And we are also continuing around SGMA. So we received an updated plan from the Cahuilla Subbasin and have, after a high-level review, it looks like there's been substantial progress on addressing all of the deficiencies that we had identified in the draft staff report. And so This is the first time we will have canceled the public hearing to put a sub-basin on probation. We are doing a more thorough review now, staff are, to fully determine if the deficiencies are addressed. We can set a new public notice and hearing date or workshop item to, or board item to consider whether to put it on probation or send it back to DWR. So that's some good news. We still have a probationary hearing. Our next one is scheduled for the Kern County Subbasin, February 20th. We have held a public workshop on mill deer and antelope creek for establishing in-stream flows for the rivers creek, and actually held that workshop yesterday. And then we have on Monday the 16th, our pre-hearing conference on the Delta Conveyance Project. And we're continuing to move forward on the sites project consideration. The next hearing dates for that are in February. We held our last meeting of the year with the Safer Advisory Group on December 5th. And on November 6th, we got input on the policies for the Clean Water State Revolving Fund and the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund. We're considering updates to those. And those set the policies for our annual adoption of the intended use plan for those two funds, both for grants and loans. Comments were due on November 22nd for that. I think those were the things I wanted to make sure to highlight, but I'm happy to answer any questions and just wishing everyone a happy holidays and a chance to relax and recuperate and celebrate with families.
Thank you, Laurel. Do we have any questions from board? All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Okay, agenda item five is a selection of dates for board meetings to be held in 2025. I wonder if we can reorder this to lower in the agenda to wait for our two absent board members to just make sure that they are approving of these dates. Do I need a motion to do that? And I apologize, I can't see our council. There's a giant poinsettia in the way, so. Okay. All right, so we will come back to agenda item five and move on to the uncontested calendar of items for adoption. All items appearing under the uncontested items calendar are acted upon by the board in one motion without discussion. At this time, there are three items on the uncontested calendar, agenda items six through eight. Item six is a waste discharge requirements order and the corresponding monitoring and reporting program for the City of El Centro Wastewater Treatment Plant located in Imperial County. Item seven is a waste discharge requirements order for the RE Cobalt LLC Cobalt Solar Project located in Riverside County. And item eight is a rescission of the cease and desist order R7-2023-0033 and waste discharge requirements order R7-2007-0008 for the Desert Vista Village Wastewater Treatment and Disposal Systems located in San Bernardino County. Turning now to consideration of the uncontested calendar, does any board member wish to remove any of these items from the uncontested calendar? Okay. If any member of the public wishes to remove any of these items from the uncontested calendar, you need to have filled out a speaker card. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards on this item?
No, Chair Satin, there is not.
Okay, wonderful. I don't want to pull any item, but I do have a few questions regarding the mitigation determination process for item seven regarding the Cobalt Solar Project. I was wondering if any staff is able to answer some questions on that.
Good morning, Chair Satin. Good
morning, Mr. Rob. So I know in item seven, I'm noting that the we were requiring 70-odd acres of mitigation for impacts to waters of the state. And I'm curious to know, I guess, a little bit of the process of how we go about approving that mitigation and what sort of coordination we're doing with other agencies, perhaps, that may have similar mitigation requirements, or at least mitigation that may overlap with what we are requiring to be mitigated, and what kind of coordination takes place at the agency level.
I think that first off, you know, for the RE Cobalt project, as a part of the application, they submitted a conceptual mitigation plan or compensatory mitigation plan. I think it had, you know, a lot of the elements that we would require according to our procedures for a mitigation plan. I think that what needs to happen further is more coordination with the discharger and CDFW and U.S. Fish and Wildlife to select those mitigation lands for it. You know, as far as application completeness determination, we have the conceptual mitigation plan that was presented to us. You know, we need to finalize that plan. Inside of that order, we have given the dischargers or permittee 180 days to finalize their compensatory mitigation plan. You know, we interact with CDFW, you know, on projects here and there, and, you know, we've had our discussions about conceptual or mitigation plans with them. We do intend to, you know, have further conversations with Fish and Wildlife with this project as well as other projects in our region. And that's probably a topic that we would probably approach with them. I think that for the Easley project, which was mm-hmm. our permit that was adopted last month, I think that, you know, I did kind of interact with them to see, you know, how they oversee these mitigation lands. And, you know, as far as I know, that they're identified as a third party mm-hmm. Lessee, and they do have some type of oversight.
My biggest question, I guess, or maybe it's curiosity, is how, you know, the mitigation we're requiring for our waters of the state under Port of Cologne interact with their mitigation requirements under 1600 stream bed alteration agreements, and whether they're, do they stack, are they separate mitigation requirements, and who's determining what constitutes the limits of waters of the state?
Well, let's go back, and I think that our procedures manual for how we permit dredge fill projects, I think that there is a mitigation requirement, mm-hmm. and it does identify that it is allowed for them to satisfy mitigation requirements for us, as well as, you know, other agencies. You know, there's, you know, the impacted waters, you know, it's, you know, under the jurisdiction of, you know, our agency as well as others. So if they can satisfy our mitigation requirements with their mitigation requirements, it's acceptable. I think that with Fish and Wildlife, the way that they identify the waters of the state might be a little bit larger. So usually their mitigation requirements are much larger than ours. Mm. You know, we do get some type of a water resource report for these mitigation lands, where it does kind of delineate, you know, the waters of the state that are on the lands. And, you know, we do, you know, take a look at that and make sure that you know, for our purposes, we do have our waters of the state on there.
And it's, so, do we ever get named as like a third party beneficiary in whatever, you know, in the event that a conservation easement is being placed over these mitigation parcels, or, you know, or we kind of just, do we just receive the reports as a matter of course?
I think we do receive reports. Are we identified as a third party on those mitigation lands? I don't think so. I think that it is Fish and Wildlife that does kind of oversee those lands.
Okay.
I think it's just because, you know, our permits, you know, have an expiration date, and I think that, you know, usually it would be handled by Fish and Wildlife.
Okay. Okay. That's helpful. Thank you so much for answering those questions, Mr. Rubb.
Thank you.
With that, if there's no other questions, I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
I'll second.
Excuse me, Chair Satin. We have the discharger for that item, for item 7, and she's trying to log in. So if we can just have a moment, please. Yeah, she's having difficulty getting it. Hold on a second.
Stand by.
You
guys, I really can't hear over here very well. This speaker is, to me, is garbly. And I thought you just made the motion, but you were asking for the motion?
I made the motion. No,
you made it.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, I made the motion.
But it's, I'm having a hard time, so
it's a little
microphone,
echoey,
guys.
Yeah.
Chair Satin, let's go ahead and proceed.
Okay. All right, we've resolved our technical issue. I'd also like to note before the vote is taken that Board Member Perez has joined us about midway through that presentation. So to recap, I made the motion. Board Member Wright seconded. Can I have a roll call vote, please?
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez? Motion carries.
Okay. Proceeding now to the contested and discussion calendar of items for adoption, beginning with agenda item 9, which is a waste discharge requirement order for Tri Point Homes, Inland Empire.
Chair Satin, let's let it know that Board Member Gonzalez has read.
Okay. Okay, I'll note for the record that Board Member Gonzalez has arrived. So with that, I will now open the hearing on agenda item 9, which is a waste discharge requirement order for Tri Point Homes IESD Incorporated, Atwell Phases 6 through 8 development project located in Riverside County. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
No, there is not.
Got it. I will now administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do. Okay. All right. Please state your name, affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. The order of the speakers on this item are presentation by Alyssa Duro, board staff, comments from the discharger, comments from the public, board member comments and discussion, and then I will close the hearing. So we'll kick it off. Ms. Duro, you're up.
Thank you, Chair Satin, members of the board, and members of the public. My name is Alyssa Duro, and I'm an environmental scientist in the Regional Water Board's National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or NPDES, unit. I have taken the oath. I am providing information about the tentative order for dredge or fill waste discharge requirements for the Atwell Phase 6 through 8 development project. Next slide, please. This tentative order prescribes waste discharge requirements, or WDRs, which authorize the discharges of dredged or filled materials to waters of the state that will result from project activities. The order includes conditions that the discharger will comply with to avoid, minimize, and lastly compensate for adverse impacts to waters of the state resulting from the project. Next slide, please. This order is for a development project that will be located near the northwest edge of the city of Banning in Riverside County, shown as a black star in the map on the right. Surrounding land uses include a golf course to the northwest, residential developments to the west and south, and open space in the San Bernardino Mountains to the northeast. Prior to this project, the site was mostly used for livestock grazing and agriculture. The hydrology on the site has been altered by various disturbances, including the construction of earthen berms that altered the flow of tributaries to nearby Smith Creek and the Pershing Channel. Runoff from the project site now mostly flows into Smith Creek, which flows to the San Gregorio River, the Whitewater River, Coachella Valley Stormwater Channel, and ultimately the Salton Sea. Next slide, please. The Atwell Phase 6 through 8 development involves the construction of approximately 417 acres of residential development along with associated infrastructure such as roads, parks, developed open space, and a trail system. The project also includes construction of the East Branch, which makes up approximately 16 acres of the project's 161-acre master drainage system improvements known as the Smith Creek Corridor. Phases 6 through 8 of the project cover approximately 433 acres in total and include the remaining residential units and master drainage system improvements in the City of Banning's Atwell Butterfield specific plan development. The figure on the right is showing the project area for the phases permitted by this order in orange, the larger Atwell Butterfield development project boundary in black, and Smith Creek is shown here as a blue line near the center of the map. Next slide, please. Key components of the project permitted by this order include constructing the east branch of the Smith Creek corridor, filling and realigning a portion of Smith Creek, installing grade control structures, box culverts, and outfall structures, establishing storm drain connections to capture runoff and direct flow to the east branch facility, installing a water tank reservoir and infrastructure, and filling natural tributaries to Smith Creek. The figure on the right shows the east branch in blue, planned areas of residential development in black, and previously permitted phases of the Atwell Butterfield development project in gray. Next slide. The discharger will avoid and minimize impacts to water quality during construction by implementing construction and operational best management practices, or BMPs, such as those outlined in the project's stormwater pollution prevention plan and the required NPDES construction general stormwater permit. Construction BMPs may include silt fences, sediment traps, and site stabilization. Operational BMPs may include regular vehicle maintenance and inspection, spill cleanup procedures, proper waste disposal, and employee training on pollution prevention. The project design includes features intended to enhance drainage capacity, reduce flooding hazards, reduce water quality impacts due to new impervious surfaces, and facilitate groundwater recharge and sediment transport within the Smith Creek corridor, despite alterations to existing drainage patterns. The project also includes a sediment monitoring plan to make sure sediment continues to flow through the Smith Creek corridor in its developed condition. And the photo on the right is showing a portion of Smith Creek that flows through the project site. Next slide. Non-wetland waters of the state present on the site include Smith Creek, which is an ephemeral stream channel that generally flows north to south through the site and is the main stem of the Smith Creek Corridor Master Drainage System. The portions of Smith Creek in the project area for this phase of development are shown in blue and can be seen near the center of the figure and also in the southern portion of the Atwell Butterfield project area. 13 unnamed ephemeral stream channels are also present on the site and generally flow northeast to southwest before terminating on site or discharging to Smith Creek. And these figures are also shown in blue in the figure on the right. Despite implementation of avoidance and minimization measures, this project will result in permanent direct impacts to waters of the state. A portion of Smith Creek will be permanently filled and reconstructed to align with the East Branch facility and the rest of the Smith Creek corridor, resulting in 0.81 acres of permanent impacts. The 13 unnamed tributaries to Smith Creek will be graded and permanently filled, resulting in 0.51 acres of permanent impacts. In total, the project will result in 1.32 acres of permanent impacts to waters of the state. Next slide. The Water Board's procedures for authorizing discharges of dredged or fill materials to waters of the state establish standards and criteria for the use of compensatory mitigation to offset unavoidable impacts. Compensatory mitigation types include on-site and off-site permittee responsible mitigation, in-lieu fee programs, and mitigation banks. In many cases, mitigation banks and in-lieu fee programs are environmentally preferable compared to permittee responsible mitigation. Compensatory mitigation methods can include reestablishment, rehabilitation, establishment, enhancement, and in certain circumstances, preservation of water resources. Generally, reestablishment and rehabilitation are the environmentally preferred methods. For this project, the discharger is providing compensatory mitigation for authorized permanent impacts to 1.32 acres of waters of the state through the purchase of 2.13 acres of reestablishment and/or rehabilitation mitigation bank credits from River Park Mitigation Bank. The mitigation ratio is 1-to-1 for impacts to the unnamed tributaries to Smith Creek and 2-to-1 for impacts to Smith Creek. And the discharger has provided a copy of the River Park Mitigation Bank Credit Reservation Agreement, confirming that the amount of reserved credits is sufficient to meet compensatory mitigation requirements. Next slide, please. This tentative order was available for the public to review and comment on for 30 days from November 6, 2024 through December 6, 2024. and no comments were received from the public. Next slide, please. At this time, Regional Water Board staff recommends that the board adopt the tentative order as proposed. Next slide, please. Thank you for considering this tentative order, and I look forward to answering any questions you may have. Thank you.
I'm going to ask if the discharger has any comments, and then the board will have an opportunity to ask questions after we hear from the discharger.
Michael Heishman. Michael, can you hear me?
Can you guys hear me now?
Yes. Go ahead, sir.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello, can you guys hear me?
We can hear you.
Board, are you able to hear me? Board, are you able to hear me?
Yes, Michael.
Board, are you able to hear me? Oh. Sorry, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good. Sorry. Bunch of audio choices here. Sorry. My name is Michael Heishman. I'm with Holmes. I'm here to answer any questions that you guys have. And thank you for the presentation.
Wonderful. Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the board? I don't have any questions, I guess. I'm familiar that with this project from my my day job, and I know that there's been some discussion about sediment and drainage from the various other agencies. And have we been coordinating with those agencies and on the meetings? Is the drainage plan undergoing any changes that we need to be aware of or that will change this permit issuance?
We did attend a meeting just last week that included the interested agencies as well as representatives from the discharger. And it's my understanding that everyone has approved of the project in its current design and that there are efforts moving forward to address some of those current issues in that reach of Smith Creek.
Okay. All right. Any motion for this item? We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call vote, please.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
All right. Hearing for that item is closed. Okay. Moving on to item 10, I am now opening the hearing on agenda item 10, specifically the board's second hearing for further consideration of cease and desist order for Jose J. Reyes, for residential on-site wastewater treatment system located at 6366 Hermosa Avenue in Yucca Valley. The first hearing on this matter occurred on October 15th, after which the board voted to continue the matter to a later date. This hearing will be conducted in accordance with the second reissued hearing procedure dated October 31st, 2024. As explained in the hearing procedure, board staff have separated functions between the advisory team and the prosecution team. The advisory team consists of Michael Placencia, the board's executive officer, and David Lancaster, the board's counsel. The prosecution team consists of the board's assistant executive officer, Cassandra Owens, board staff Emma McCorkle and Michael Perez, and David Boyers, assistant chief counsel from the Office of Enforcement. The discharger, Jose J. Reyes, is representing himself. For this second hearing, the evidence will include those exhibits that were previously admitted for the first hearing, as well as designated exhibits of supplemental evidence submitted by the prosecution team. The discharger was also provided an opportunity to submit supplemental evidence, but did not do so. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
No, there is not.
I will now administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do. Okay, please state your name, affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. The order of speakers for this item are presentation by Michael Perez, board staff, comments from the discharger, comments from the public, board member comments and discussion, and then I will close the hearing. Mr. Perez, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board, and members of the public. I'm Michael Perez. I'm the enforcement coordinator for this regional board, and I have taken the oath. The prosecution team is requesting that you adopt the cease and desist order to compel the discharger, Jose J. Reyes, to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, which is included in the water quality control plan for the Colorado River Basin region. The property is located at 6366 Hermosa Avenue in the town of Yucca Valley and is owned by Jose J. Reyes. Next slide, please. During the first day of hearing on October 15th, the prosecution team presented evidence supporting the need for the tentative cease and desist order, including property ownership records, the location of a property, and documents showing outreach by the High Desert Water District and Regional Board and the Regional Board staff notifying the discharger of the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition and the need to connect to the available sewer system. This presentation will not repeat all of that evidence, but we will again show you the location of the property for background and then focus on our supplemental evidence showing the current state of the property and an updated water bill showing ongoing and continued water usage. We will then summarize a proposed cease and desist order and we'll end by giving you our recommendation. Next slide, please. This illustration depicts the phase one area, which is where sewer is available and is the area where we are seeking compliance with the prohibition. The different colored areas that are numbered 1 through 10 designate specific date ranges of when sewer became available. The property belonging to Mr. Reyes is located at 6366 Hermosa Avenue, which is in the vicinity of where the arrow is pointing. If you click one more time, it'll show the location. And is, as you can see, is located within stage two. Stage two area had a sewer availability on March 2020. Therefore, and in accordance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, the discharger was to cease discharging and connect to the sewer system 180 days after March 2020, which sets a compliance date of September 2020. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates the distance of sewer to the discharger's property as being less than 200 feet. The blue shaded area depicts the discharger's property. The green line depicts the location of the sewer main. The black line depicts the location of the lateral to the property. The white dot depicts the approximate location of the septic tank. And down on the right corner of the illustration, there is a 50-foot scale, which indicates that the lateral is less than 50 feet in length. The basin plan defines sewer as being available for residential parcels when the public sewer on any building or exterior drainage facility connected thereto is located less than 200 feet from any existing or proposed building or exterior drainage facility on the parcel, and the parcel abuts and is served by such public sewer. Therefore, this property met the criteria of sewer availability as defined in the basin plan. Next slide, please. During the first day of hearing, the prosecution team presented this slide, which is a screenshot from Google Maps taken during the month of September 2024. But the imagery is from 2007, according to Google. Next slide, please. This slide shows new evidence obtained after October 15th hearing, and is a photograph I took on November 12, 2024. The photograph demonstrates the property as having some activity. It appears that the property is being cleaned by the type of items that are on the driveway and the tools in the front yard, such as a shovel, a broom, and a plastic tote. Next slide, please. This slide shows new evidence obtained by the prosecution team following the October 15th hearing and demonstrates that water is available at the property, was used, is ready to be used, and has recently been used. Next slide, please. To notify the discharger of the previous hearing and or this hearing, and in accordance with the hearing procedures and the advisory team's direction, the prosecution team sent the original tentative cease and desist order to the discharger via certified mail. The tentative cease and desist order was returned, so the prosecution team resent the tentative cease and desist order via process server. The hearing procedures for this case were also sent via process server. FedEx was used to deliver the evidence and witness list. The October 10, 2024 slides were sent via FedEx mail. The reissued notice of public hearing and adopted hearing procedures for this hearing with a page in Spanish to inform the recipients to contact us if they preferred the information in Spanish were also sent via FedEx mail. And the slides for this board hearing and revised tentative cease and desist order were sent to two addresses via FedEx mail. Mailing was necessary since staff does not have an email address for this discharger. Next slide, please. The cease and desist order, if adopted, would compel the discharger to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in accordance with a time schedule. Documentation, such as a cost estimate to connect to the sewer system and decommissioning the septic tank, is required by January 13, 2025. A certificate of connection to the sewer system will be required by February 17, 2025. And then it also requires that the discharger be in full compliance by March 1st, 2025. And if there are any delays caused by circumstances beyond the discharger's control, the discharger may request a deadline extension from our executive officer. Next slide, please. In summary, the property has a septic tank that has been discharging or threatening to discharge nitrates and other waste to groundwater. The sewer system has been available to the discharger since March 2020. Therefore, the discharger was required to stop discharging since September 2020. The discharger was notified of the septic tank prohibition by the High Desert Water District prior to sewer availability. The discharger was notified of the septic tank prohibition by the regional board after sewer availability. The cease and desist order sets a reasonable timeline for compliance. The cease and desist order allows for requests for a compliance date extension when circumstances are beyond the discharger's control. And the discharger has not responded to any of the notices of violations and subsequent requests to come into compliance with the prohibition. Next slide, please. In conclusion, the prosecution team recommends that the board adopt the tentative cease and desist order with the changes noted. And before I end this presentation, I'd like to invite our counsel, David Boyers.
Thanks, Michael. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the board. Again, I'm David Boyers, counsel for the prosecution team on this matter. And I wanted to speak to the legal issue that was discussed at length during our last hearing. As directed by this board, we went out and we collected further evidence of occupancy and use of water. I continue to strongly disagree that that is the appropriate standard that we should be held to in order to show a threat of a discharge. The advisory team in its summary report says that we should go and find evidence of continued habitation such that domestic wastewater will be generated. The change sheet that we've proposed in the tentative order would reject that standard and instead adopt a standard which says that we basically should go out and show that the property has a septic tank that is being or could be used such that a discharge of domestic wastewater is taking place or threatening to take place. If adopted by this board, the advisory team standard would require your staff to regularly monitor and inspect for signs of occupancy and answer the question, what amount of water use is sufficient? Say, for example, we have evidence of water use, one unit of water over the last 3 months. We go out, we take a picture of the home, and there's not a car in the driveway. What are we to do with that situation? Are we to bring that to you and ask you to adopt a cease and desist order? Is that sufficient evidence of occupancy or continued intent to occupy? I don't know the answer to that question, and I don't think our staff knows the answer to that question. And I think that reading of the basin plan prohibition and the water code is far too narrow. And I'll remind you, this cease and desist order process is really just the first step in the enforcement process, right? We issue these cease and desist orders. These folks have not been engaged with us. I don't expect all of them to go out and hook up to the sewer system. The next step is an ACL, and we'll be back before you with ACLs for all of these cease and desist orders. So, you know, my point is we should take a less burdensome standard for issuance of these cease and desist orders so we can put this step out of the way and then move on to the next step where ultimately the goal is compliance and to get everybody out there to hook up. Thank you.
Is the discharger present for any comments?
No, there's not.
Are there any comments from the public? Does the board have any comments or questions?
David was saying, guys mixed up here.
Which one?
David, I can't see you. Was saying, was it there's something, is it that in there right now is what I'm asking, I guess. Or what are we voting on?
Board Member Wright, when we transmitted last week, as soon as we got it from the prosecution team, the board members received redline copies of the revised tentative orders for all three cease and desist orders that are on calendar for today. The advisory team does not necessarily feel like the statement, the tentative order rejects what was stated in the standard that was articulated in the summary report. But the prosecution team's evidence certainly does meet that, or could arguably meet that standard, you know, based on what the presentation that Mr. Perez just gave.
So I guess I'm still not, you know, sure about what this is. So if we vote yes today, do you guys have to monitor this thing all the time? I guess that's my question, which is unusual. So just want
to... Mr. Boris, would you be able to comment on the next step for a hypothetical? How would one enforce on a cease and desist order if they don't do anything?
Well, I'm happy to answer that question. I'm not sure that's the question you were asking. Before you today is a tentative cease and desist order for this property. We have proposed revisions to that tentative cease and desist order that would reflect the standard that I think is appropriate for what is a threat of a discharge. We would urge you to adopt that proposed cease and desist order today so that in the future, all the other folks who don't have cease and desist orders yet, we can go out and we can do what we ordinarily would do to gather evidence of a threat of a discharge, right? Evidence of a home with a sewer, with a septic tank, and availability of water, not necessarily active use of water or somebody out there. We might go out and find a vacant property. We would urge you to say we should still adopt a cease and desist order for that vacant property because somebody might move in next month and that threat still exists. We shouldn't be driving down those streets looking for folks in the yard watering their plants. We shouldn't be looking for cars in the driveway or water bills. I think that's an unnecessary burden on your staff. To answer Mr. Lancaster's question, what do we do next? If you adopt a cease and desist order for this property or for any property, there are deadlines within that cease and desist order that require them to hook up to the community sewer system. If they don't, that gives rise to potential monetary liability, right? And there's a whole process for that. We would We would issue them a notice of violation and say, hey, you have a cease and desist order. You've got to comply. They don't comply, then we would issue an administrative civil liability complaint proposing to impose penalties for that noncompliance, and we would need to bring that to you for consideration and adoption, or potentially your executive officer under delegated authority. That would impose a monetary fine, whether they pay that, whether they hook up, are just all questions that we would need to deal with in the future. If they don't hook up and they don't pay, we would get a lien on the property, so the next time it was sold. So, you know, it, as I said before, this is just the first step in the enforcement process.
I agree. I understand that part. Okay. Thought that, I just wanted to make sure that what you're saying is what we're voting on.
Board Member Wright, was your question that were you asking if we would have to be regularly checking on this property after we adopt the order?
Right, because that was what I think was the other one, right? Was the last meeting.
So there would be somebody doing surveillance or...
I can't understand you.
These speakers are... Oh, sorry, yeah. The microphones are not...
Yeah, that's what I'm having.
Or maybe it's me. Today. I don't know. I will try to clearly enunciate. All right, so are you asking if following the cease and desist order... we would have to regularly monitor the property afterwards?
With the language that we have in today's this particular cease and desist. That's what I meant.
Legally, no.
Okay, thank you.
And so just to confirm, we're replacing finding 18...
I read it, but I didn't get a copy of it.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate in the change sheet, I would actually, it seems to me that it provides more specificity about when we find something warranting a CDO rather than the existing language in the CDO. I don't have a problem with either, I guess. And I don't know that I read either as requiring us to go constantly surveil. I do appreciate the level of effort to demonstrate that a violation is taking place. But I don't have a problem with either terminology, I guess, either the change sheet or as originally stated. Any other thoughts or comments?
Yeah. Mr. Perez, I have a question for you. Roughly how many properties in phase one have connected?
I'd want to say about 40, roughly less than 4,300.
4,300.
Maybe 4,200. I remember the original number being 4,400.
So 200 and left to be connected?
There's 170 according to the end of last month's count. Exactly 170.
Okay, so we've got over 95% connected. So I'd be in favor of making to expedite this process because they're going to be starting phase two soon too. So in order to make that a better rate of connecting, I would definitely like to expedite this and put less emphasis on staff time determining if a property is being used, because the septic prohibition says you can't discharge. And this was back from 2011. So let's just enforce what we've started with and relieve our staff of unnecessary efforts because it's not required.
I would say that you make some good arguments. I mean, you talk about like there is a need for ensuring compliance, people are compliant with phase two, and there's a lot of things going on. However, the legal standard, whether it's what I say or Mr. Boyer says, you know, that has no bearing on what the legal standard is. So, you know, that kind of exists regardless of the public policy interests.
I don't dispute what you're saying. I'm just trying to relieve staff and expedite the process. The sewer system's there. Everyone should be connected. I mean, they should be connecting them as they go along, hopefully, in phase two. But I think we need... I think staff has more important things to do than to travel to see if someone potentially may be using water at a given point in time when there is a structure there and we do know that it has the potential use that we should make them connect. Or they can put in their own enhanced system as long as they meet the requirements. There's enhanced septic tanks that will eliminate some of the nitrates that would meet that requirement. It's much more expensive, and you've got to maintain it yourself. So it's not worthwhile from a cost perspective to have your own enhanced system, as some of the properties up there do and are willing to, and want to connect to the system because of the financial savings.
Yeah, I don't think this was an issue at all up in Mission Springs Water District. And basically, it just keeps the process moving forward. I don't think any of them in Mission Springs was ever fined. The Water District did offer a loan plan, a low-interest loan plan for the very end of it there, and then over so many period of time, so many months or year or whatever, and the payment would go on their water bill, and that's how we ended up getting most of the other ones connected. But nobody ever got those.
And Nancy,
fines that I know of. Anyway.
Nancy, in this project, there was a low-interest loan, and if it was owner-occupied, you were eligible for 100% grant. And there is provisions that if it was cost prohibitive, that you could get an exemption from the executive officer. This is less than 200 feet is not cost prohibitive.
And it's also in the water code too. Public sewer available for your property. You got to hook up. I think that one is more like 200 feet, but I read the other day something about 500.
So if we're to make a motion, we need to make a motion that also indicates which version of finding 18 we would like to include. Is that correct?
Well, that is the best practice. When there is a revised tentative order, the best practice, and this is for all the board members' benefit, when you make a motion, especially when you have multiple revisions, how is the public supposed to know what was adopted? Mm-hmm. Just simply say, I vote to adopt the tentative order issued, that is issued dated December 2nd, I think. December 3rd. Sorry. So that's all you have to do. Just say, that way we're absolutely careful about which version you guys voted on to approve.
Whose order is that? Is that your order, or is that...
Once you vote on it, it will be yours.
It's not right now. So is it your suggestion, or is it David's suggestion?
My suggestion with the... If the prosecution team can say so if they disagree, but I'm talking about what is the best practice for generally when we vote on revised orders. It's good to specify if we have a date available for that revision. Let's say that this order has been revised. Let's say that this is not an enforcement order. Let's say it's an ordinary permit, but we may need to make certain changes after a public comment period or something like that, and you get... those changes occur after you receive a transmittal of the original version. You get the original version, and then there's a revised version that gets transmitted to you. The best practice.
So to avoid confusion on my part, I would make a motion based upon the gentleman who's at the speaker's now, what he recommended.
I'll just clarify what the prosecution team's proposed revisions to finding 18 would be, which I believe is the December 2nd version that is being referenced by your counsel. And finding 18 would read, the Regional Water Board finds that, new text, Jose J. Reyes owns property on which an OWTS is located that is being used or could be used, and that, and then original text, a discharge of waste, and new text, from the OWTS to groundwater, original text, is taking place, and then the final new text would be, or threatening to take place, the original text, in violation of the basin plan, continued with all original text.
Members of the board, that is the version that was sent to you on December 3rd, and all of the revised tentative orders that the prosecution team has submitted are dated as of December 3rd. So if those changes are reflected in the tentative order dated December 3rd, so all you have to do is just say, if you so choose to move, I move to adopt the tentative order dated December 3rd, and that's it.
Excuse me. There are a couple of other changes that are in that December 3rd iteration as well, which are updates to the date. Under it is hereby ordered, finding one, the date was changed from November 14th, 2024 to January 13th, 2025. In finding two, the compliance date was changed from December 16th, 2024 to February 17th, 2025. And in finding three, the date was changed from January 1st, 2025 to March 2025. And those date changes are necessary as a result of the hearing dates being moved.
And just to further clarify, those are required action deadlines, not findings. But yes, those dates would be necessary since this order was originally supposed to be heard in October. So that's why those required action deadlines, I would assume, would be necessary.
I suppose as I had mentioned earlier, I don't necessarily disagree with the change to finding 18 proposed by the prosecution team. Although I will continue to emphasize that some level of due diligence beyond provision of a photograph from 2007 should be provided. And barring absence of updated evidence, I'm still uncomfortable issuing a CDO in the example given by Mr. Boyers to a vacant piece of land in the assumption that it could eventually have development placed on it that would be inviolate. That for me is far too hypothetical. I don't know if we can encourage as a board a best practice that, you know, I like the inclusion of the water bill to demonstrate that discharges were taking place and that we were not just kind of, you know, willy-nilly issuing cease and desist orders. To that end, I guess I like the, I don't know, I find 18 to be a little bit more broad and lets us maintain a level of control. But again, I'm okay with the language in the revision to 18, but I still would encourage staff to be, you know, exercising some due diligence and making sure that the evidence submitted in the record is current. But I'm otherwise happy to entertain this current.
Chair, I have a request. We have the president of the High Desert Water District Board here. I would like him to come up and just give us his perception of what due diligence is done by the water district before this goes to the board. Mr. McComb?
Has he submitted a comment card?
But he will. Would you come up here, sir?
I believe he needs to issue can we have him? And you need to take the oath. Have you taken the oath?
He can testify. Go ahead and administer the oath.
Yeah. All right. Raise your right hand, please, and come to the podium. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Awesome. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Scott McCone. He's the board president at High Desert Water District. And Scott, I would just, from your perspective, and you've lived up in the community quite a while, what does the water district do in their due diligence before they even send an item like this to the regional board?
Well, first, let me introduce myself. Thank you, Ed, for calling me. I don't have any really prepared remarks here, but Scott McCone, yes, I am president of the board at High Desert Water District. Actually, what I would like to ask is there a septic prohibition order in place now for Yucca Valley? I think we know the answer is yes. Okay, I think that I've also read that when a sewer becomes available, you must hook up. So what I'm hearing is that there are septic tanks in the ground that have to stop discharging, be removed, hooked up to the sewer. So I guess my next question would be, why would the board allow a septic tank to remain and not hook up?
Is that a rhetorical question? Are you testifying? You're making an argument.
Actually, I'm asking a question. If there is a septic prohibition and septic tanks have to be abandoned, then why would the board be considering allowing tanks to remain simply by virtue that maybe the water is not turned on currently, there's no current discharge? The way that I read this is that the tank needs to be abandoned and they have to connect to the sewer. Because what's happening here also that I'm hearing or seeing is that who's going to be the watchdog? Who's going to play traffic cop that when the water does get turned back on, who's going to go out there and, well, now they're discharging. I mean, why not just settle this now?
Members of the board, the legal standard for the issuance of a cease and desist order remains unchanged. The basin plan does say you must cease discharging through your septic tank. We can issue a cease and desist order if someone is threatening to discharge wastewater from their septic tank in violation of that prohibition. No one's disputing the existence of the prohibition, a threatened discharge. I think that is for debate amongst yourselves. That is a determination that the board needs to make, as I've said in the prior proceedings. That just the water code does not let us issue a cease and desist order merely for the fact. I mean, I'll finish and I'll explain it further. Merely having the water code does not say, if you have a septic tank and you haven't hooked up and there's a basin plan prohibition, you can issue a cease and desist order. The board needs to find that there is a threatened discharge. Now, that could look a number of different ways. It is up to you as members of the board to determine what kind of proximity of threat, like how likely does that need to be for a cease and desist order to issue, and how much you need to know about a property to make that threat concrete or to, you know, flesh out what the factual circumstance is on the ground. That is what the issue is. So we've never, you know, there absolutely is a basin plan prohibition. It says you need to cease discharging from your septic tank and you need to hook up. But our enforcement authority is based on whether or not there is a threatened discharge of wastewater from this septic tank. So if some, that would violate the prohibition. So that is what the legal standard is, and that's the factual issue that's before us today. We have a very...
From my perspective, if it's in existence, it's a threat.
Okay.
And until it's removed or they're disconnected from it, it's a threat.
Just to make things spicy, I would disagree with that opinion. So,
okay.
And I think that's why we're having these discussions.
Am I mistaken in thinking that there is language that when a sewer becomes available and there's a septic prohibition order, the tank must be removed? Am I mistaken in that belief?
Our legal, insofar as it relates to the water code, yes.
Once the sewer becomes available, not have to hook up.
Once the sewer becomes available, they have to stop discharging from their septic tank. And that's what our basin plan says. And so, the assumption is that as long as they're going to keep flushing the toilet, then yes, they would have to hook up. If there's nobody flushing a toilet, if they're not generating any wastewater, then there would be no actual discharge of wastewater in violation of the basin plan. Now, the question is, what is a threatened discharge? And that cuts us to what we were just talking about.
Why is this being debated? I'm just asking, I'm just curious. I mean, I don't understand why this is being debated. If we're under a septic prohibition, and I mean, there's a threat of a discharge, then why continue to continue this where somebody's going to have to monitor? You know, I want to point out something else that Mr. Music pointed out. The High Desert Water Act, he was responsible for getting the expanded use loan. What that allowed people to do was hook up basically for free. There was no money out of pocket. There was no reason for a residential owner not to hook up. And the amount of the hookup went on to property tax bill, And then when the project was completed, then that was all reconciled, and these folks, that's going to come off their property tax bill. They're paying nothing. So there was no excuse not to hook up. Now, of course, the expanded use loan, now that that opportunity is closed. And just to go one step further on that, I think I read that when there is an order to abandon a tank, that the regional board or some water board somewhere would help find funding to hook up. So even though they've missed that opportunity, I think that there still are other opportunities to help people hook up. So if it's a question of we don't have the money to hook up, then maybe there's some relief there somehow, some way. Anyway, that's, I don't know if there's any more that I can say about this. Ed, you had a question for me specifically on how this affected us.
The question is what due diligence from your perspective does High Desert Water District do before they send an item like this to the state to get some assistance?
What I can say is that there were numerous communications sent to property owners. It's time to hook up. You've gone beyond your time to hook up. We have money available. Again, there were numerous opportunities and numerous communications sent out. And I am curious, a notice of violation said a process server, the attorney, you said had gone out. Were they successful and able to serve those papers to the owner, you know?
Well, I'm usually not the recipient of questions, and I have not taken the oath, but I certainly can take the oath and then answer this question.
Do you swear affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you.
We had this discussion at the last board meeting. My recollection is that we did serve Mr. Reyes on site, in person, through a process server paid for by the state.
Thank you. Verification. So I'll sit down now. Thanks a lot, Ed.
Thank you, Scott.
I want to just comment that my hesitation to accepting this cease and desist order was because of the language barrier, and I want to say thank you to the enforcement office for providing that Spanish notice. That really eliminates that as a question on my mind as I review this. And then I just want to comment about the Google Maps picture moving forward. If more cease and desist orders are presented and you show a Google Maps picture, I'm okay, even though it's back in 2007, I'm okay with using that as evidence, but I would recommend that that year is referenced with like the record of property detail report, like on exhibit one. It says the property was purchased in 2009, and that'll be after 2007, so I don't see that as like, I didn't see that as like a stern evidence because it was a picture when that property owner wasn't there. But moving forward, I'm okay with looking at Google Maps pictures. It's just I would reference the year of purchase. But yeah, I'd say thank you for providing that Spanish notice. And my question to Michael, is this going to be continued as a standard moving forward, like providing that Spanish notice, or was this a one-time thing?
My intended plan is to go back and go over recall, go and make phone calls over again, start from the list that I have, and make that second phone call, third phone call, and move forward that way. But there are some people who I have made contact with who have made false promises, and you may see those up here before you.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, one final comment, and we can continue on, but I'll note that for those unfamiliar, Google Earth, the desktop application does often have more updated imagery than is available through Google Maps online. It's a very useful resource. All right, with that, if there's any other comments or questions, I will close the hearing. Hearing on agenda item 10 is now closed. Is there a motion regarding agenda item 10? which is a cease and desist order for Jose J. Reyes.
So wasn't there an add-on to that?
Well, you would need to make the motion with the add-on.
Pardon?
You would need to make the motion with the add-on.
Okay, I'll make a motion to approve this with the add-on of the December 3rd. What was the name of it? December 3rd. Addendum, or is that right?
Revised tentative order that was submitted.
Tentative.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a second?
Second.
Roll call vote, please.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
All right, thank you. And thank you to the board members for the robust discussion and for the board president from High Desert Water. I am now opening the hearing on agenda item 11, which is a cease and desist order for Rebecca Russell for a residential on-site wastewater treatment system located at 58380 Neva Court in Nooka Valley. This hearing will be conducted in accordance with the reissued hearing procedure dated October 31st, 2024. As explained in the hearing procedure, board staff have separated functions between the advisory team and the prosecution team. The advisory team consists of Michael Placencia, the board's executive officer, and David Lancaster, the board counsel. Prosecution team consists of the board's assistant executive officer, Cassandra Owens, board staff Emma McCorkle and Michael Perez, and David Boyer's assistant chief counsel from the Office of Enforcement. The discharger, Rebecca Russell, is representing herself. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item? Madam Clerk, any speaker cards?
No, there is not.
Thank you. I will now administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do. Thank you. All right, please state your name, affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. Order of the speakers for this item are presentation by Michael Perez, board staff, comments from the discharger, comments from the public, board member comments and discussion, after which I will close the hearing. Mr. Perez.
Can we go back to the first slide, please? Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board, and members of the public. I'm Michael Perez, and I'm the enforcement coordinator for this regional board, and I have taken the oath. The prosecution team is requesting that you adopt a cease and desist order to compel the discharger, Rebecca Russell, to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, which is included in the water quality control plan for the Colorado River Basin region. The property is located at 58380 Neva Court in the town of Yucca Valley, and is owned by Rebecca Russell. Next slide, please. In this presentation, I will present the location of the property that is subject to a prohibition, along with some evidence, the proposed cease and desist order, then finally staff's recommendation. Next slide, please. The property belonging to Ms. Russell is located at 58380 Neva Court, which is in the vicinity of where the arrow is pointing. As you can see, it is located within Stage 3. The Stage 3 area had a sewer availability from January 2020 to April 2020. Therefore, at the very latest, and in accordance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, the discharger was to cease discharging and connect to the sewer system 180 days after April 2020, which sets a compliance date of October 2020. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates the distance of sewer to the discharger's property as less than 200 feet. The blue outlined area depicts the discharger's property. The green line depicts the location of the sewer main. The black line depicts the lateral to the property. The white dot depicts the approximate location of the septic tank. And down on the right lower corner of the illustration, there is a 50-foot scale, which indicates that the lateral is less than 50 feet in length. Therefore, this property met the 200-foot distance criteria of the sewer availability as defined in the basin plan. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates the property as being inhabitable and currently occupied. This photograph was taken by me on October 23rd, 2024. Next slide, please. This property is a close-up view of the previous photograph and depicts the number on the mailbox as matching the number at the address, 58380 Neva Court. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates that water is available at the property, was used, is ready to be used, and has recently been used. Next slide, please. To notify the discharger of this hearing, the prosecution team mailed her the tentative cease and desist order on May 15, 2024. The advisory team emailed her the notice of public hearing and tentative hearing procedures on October 22, 2024. The advisory team emailed her the reissued notice of public hearing and adopted hearing procedures on October 31st, 2024. Next slide, please. If adopted, the cease and desist order would compel the discharger to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in accordance with a timely schedule. The cease and desist order would require the discharger to submit documentation such as a cost estimate to connect to the sewer system and decommission the septic tank by January 13, 2025. It would require the discharger to submit a certificate of connection to the sewer system by February 17, 2025. It would require the discharger to be in full compliance by March 3, 2025. And if there are any delays caused by circumstances beyond the discharger's control, the discharger may request a deadline extension from our executive officer. Next slide. In summary, the property has a septic tank that has been discharging or threatening to discharge nitrates and other waste to groundwater. Sewer has been available to the discharger since approximately April 2020. Therefore, the discharger was required to stop discharging by October 2020. Similar to the other recent cease and desist order regarding the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, the discharger was notified by the High Desert Water District prior to sewer availability, and the discharger was notified by the regional board staff after sewer availability. The cease and desist order sets reasonable timelines for compliance. The cease and desist order allows for requests for an extension when circumstances beyond the discharger's control affect the schedule, and the discharger has not attempted to communicate with regional board staff since August 2023. Next slide, please. In conclusion, the prosecution team recommends that the board adopt the tentative cease and desist order with the changes noted. This ends our formal presentation. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Is the discharger available for comment?
No, there is not.
Okay. Any comments from the public? Any comments or discussion from the board? Okay. With that, I will close the hearing and entertain a motion regarding this item.
I'll motion to accept staff's recommendation.
Second.
Roll call vote, please.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltan Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. I am now opening the hearing on agenda item 12, which is a cease and desist order for Nancy Ann Kennedy for a residential on-site wastewater treatment system located at 57478 in Celia Drive in Yucca Valley. The hearing will be conducted in accordance with the reissued hearing procedure dated October 31st, 2024. As explained in the hearing procedure, board staff have separated functions between the advisory team and the prosecution team. The advisory team consists of Michael Placencia, the board's executive officer, and David Lancaster, the board's counsel. The prosecution team consists of the board's assistant executive officer, Cassandra Owens, board staff Emma McCorkle and Michael Perez, and David Boyer's assistant chief counsel from the Office of Enforcement. The discharger, Nancy Ann Kennedy, is representing herself. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
No, there is not.
I will now administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do. Please state your name, affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. The order of the speakers for this item are presentation by Michael Perez, board staff, comments from the discharger, comments from the public, board member comments and discussion, after which I will close the hearing. Mr. Perez.
Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board, and members of the public. My name is Michael Perez, and I'm the enforcement coordinator for this region. The prosecution team is requesting that you adopt a cease and desist order to compel the discharger, Nancy Ann Kennedy, to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, which is included in the water quality control plan for the Colorado River Basin region. The property is located at 57478 Encelia Drive in the town of Yucca Valley and is owned by Nancy Ann Kennedy. Next slide, please. In this presentation, I will present the location of a property that is subject to a prohibition, along with some evidence, the proposed cease and desist order, then finally, staff's recommendation. Next slide. The property belonging to Ms. Kennedy is located at 57478 Encelia Drive, which is in the vicinity of where the arrow is pointing. And it is located within Stage 4. The Stage 4 area had sewer availability from April 2020 to July 2020. Therefore, at the very latest, and in accordance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, the discharger was to cease discharging and connect to the sewer system 180 days after July 2020, which sets a compliance date of January 2021. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates the distance to sewer to the discharger's property as less than 200 feet. The blue shaded area depicts the discharger's property. The green line depicts the location of the sewer main. The black line depicts the lateral to the property. The white dot depicts the approximate location of the septic tank. And down on the right corner of the illustration, there is a 50-foot scale, which suggests that the lateral is less than 50 feet in length. Therefore, this property met the 200-foot distance criteria of sewer availability as defined in the basin plan. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates the property as being inhabitable and possibly currently occupied. This photograph was taken by me on October 23rd, 2024. Next slide. This photograph is a close-up view of the previous photograph and depicts the number on the property post next to the mailbox as matching the number at the address, 57478 Encelia Drive. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates that water is available at the property, was used, is ready to be used, and has recently been used. Next slide, please. To notify the discharger of this hearing and in accordance with the hearing procedures and the advisory team's direction, the prosecution team sent the tentative cease and desist order to the discharger via certified mail on May 15, 2024. The prosecution team sent a copy of their advisory team's email, notice of public hearing, and tentative hearing procedures to the discharger via FedEx mail on October 24, 2024. Then about 2 weeks later, the prosecution team sent a copy of the advisory team's email, Spanish translated page, reissued notice of public hearing, and adopted hearing procedure to the discharger via FedEx mail on November 6, 2024. A week after, the prosecution team sent the evidence and witness list via FedEx along with a Spanish translated page on November 13, 2024. And finally, about 3 weeks later, the prosecution team sent the presentation slides, revised tentative cease and desist order, the Spanish translated page via FedEx on December 3rd, 2024. Mailing was necessary due to the discharger not providing or not owning an email address. Sorry. Next slide. If adopted, the cease and desist order will compel the discharger to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in accordance with a timely schedule. The cease and desist order would require the discharger to submit documentation such as a cost estimate to connect to a sewer system and decommission the septic tank by January 13, 2025. It would require the discharger to submit a certificate of connection to the sewer system by February 17, 2025. It would require that the discharger be in full compliance by March 1, 2025. And if there are any delays caused by circumstances beyond the discharger's control, the discharger may request a deadline extension from the executive officer. Next slide, please. In summary, the property has a septic tank that has been discharging or threatening to discharge nitrates and other waste to groundwater. The sewer has been available to the discharger since approximately July 2020. Therefore, the discharger was required to stop discharging by January 2021. Similarly, the discharger was notified of the septic tank prohibition by the High Desert Water District prior to sewer availability, and the discharger was notified of the septic tank prohibition by regional board staff after sewer availability. The cease and desist order sets a reasonable timeline for compliance. The cease and desist order allows for request for an extension when circumstances beyond the discharger's control affect the schedule, and the discharger has not responded accordingly to the notices of violation and subsequent requests to come into compliance with the prohibition. Next slide. In conclusion, the prosecution team recommends the board adopt the tentative cease and desist order with change notice. And this ends our formal presentation, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Perez. Is the discharger present for any comments?
No, there is not.
And do we have any comments from the public? Mm.
I just want to disclose that on Wednesday, November 3rd, the advisory team received a private voicemail from someone purporting to be the discharger's son. That voicemail was disclosed to the prosecution team. That voicemail was disclosed to the prosecution team. And in that voicemail, that person claimed that they were hooked up to the sewer. However, they have not chosen to testify in this proceeding. They are not here. They are not commenting. And the prosecution team continued to indicate that this matter would remain on calendar. So if you have any further questions, the prosecution team may answer those regarding their conversations with that caller.
Hey, David, I have a question. When he showed the water usage, currently in this year, so that's in violation of our septic prohibition. So do we have the ability to find them? What would we have to do to find them for not connecting and being in violation of the 2011 septic prohibition?
Could we rewind that? Could we put that slide back up? Would it be possible with the water bill? So this is, as no doubt you're familiar with, this is the water bill for water received on the property. I think one of the inferences that the board could make is that water that is received on the property will be discharged through the septic system. If any of it goes to a toilet or to a sink or to a shower, that goes to, anything that's hooked up to the septic tank. So that water would be discharged through the septic system. So if there is 22 units of water, which is a significant amount for High Desert, I understand. So that some of that water may be, the board could find and make an inference that water is going to the septic tank and is being discharged. So if that, with that inference, the board could find that an actual discharge is taking place.
Okay, so we could find them. Do we have to give them notice they're going to be fined, or could we just say, hey, they're...
I could answer that question, but I'm going to let Mr. Boyers answer that one.
So I would urge you not to get into the specifics of directing the prosecution on a specific case. I will say generally, if there's a discharge through the septic tank and we can find evidence that it has impacted groundwater, that may give rise to some liability under Water Code Section 13350. That is a pretty significant burden on us, which is why I think adopting the cease and desist order and then having specific deadlines is a much easier route towards imposing a monetary liability. All we have to show is you failed to comply with the cease and desist order. We don't have to go out and require any groundwater monitoring or show any harm or anything like that. So I think the answer to your direct question is potentially there might be a case for imposing a fine just based on the discharge through the septic tank. Realistically, the much more straightforward avenue is imposing fines for failure to comply with the cease and desist order.
Okay, and then there's roughly 150 to 200 left. Do they all have to be done individually, or could they be done in a group?
You're talking about monetary penalties? They would need.
No, I'm just talking about cease and desist orders. If the High Desert Water District has another 100 accounts, do we have to do 100 individual cease and desist orders?
Well, that's primarily a question, I think, for your council. My answer would be yes, because the Water Code requires a hearing for each cease and desist order.
Okay. Thank you.
I just motion to accept staff's recommendation respecting any questions that any board member may have.
All right. Yeah, let me close the hearing, and now we have a motion on the table. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Roll call vote, please.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. Before we move on to information items, I do want to revisit item 5, which was tentative dates for next year's board meetings. We tabled earlier this meeting. What's my script? I do think we need to formally adopt these, if I recall.
There were so many emails.
Well, these were just in the binder. All right. All right, selection of date for board meetings to be held in 2025. Is everybody okay with these dates? No one needs to change.
They're morning times, right? Okay.
I have a question.
I don't recall what we kept them as. I just know that these all work for me.
In the past, we tried to move our location for our board meetings. You know, we used to have one up in Yucca Valley at High Desert Water District up there. We did have one once in Blythe. We have gone south. Is there any anticipation? Yes. Is there any anticipation that we're going to do that going forward?
Suppose we can direct our executive officer to investigate having any of these board meetings at some of our jurisdictional facilities?
Absolutely. I can work with staff to explore that.
And especially if there was something that was going to be on the agenda that impacted that area, it would save most of the individual's time to travel here and we would be there instead.
And I support that. That move. Okay, with that, is there a motion to adopt these board meeting dates?
So moved.
Wait, before, are they all in the morning?
9 o'clock?
I mean, they're.
Are they all listed. 9 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, I think so, right?
There was one that was later.
Excuse me, all in the morning except September 2nd due to the holiday.
Right.
On that Monday.
What time is that one?
1 o'clock.
September 2nd.
September 2nd.
Just to clarify, the list of these are just a list of dates. The assumption would be that they are at 9, but if they could always be held at a different time. The agenda item 5 just has a list of dates.
Okay.
So
thank you.
We're not locked in stone here.
Yeah, we're just approving the tentative dates.
I've got September 2nd as 1 o'clock because I think it was this room. Is that still on?
Next year, September 2nd, but we should be back in our usual place or an alternate location as proposed by member music.
Yeah, I believe the clerk just mentioned that we're doing that one in the afternoon to allow for the holiday, the preceding holiday. All right, so we had a motion, and then do we have a second?
I'll second.
All right, roll call vote, please.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
The motion carries.
Okay, so moving on to information items. For agenda item 13, the board will now hear a presentation from the board's management team. Introducing this item is Michael Placencia, the board's executive officer. This is an information item only, and no actions will be taken. Mr. Placencia, when you're ready.
Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board, staff, and members of the public. I am Michael Placencia, Executive Officer. This information item will provide a mid-year update on the status of program activities, tracking metrics, noteworthy accomplishments, and help demonstrate how the programs are directed by the objectives of the strategic plan. As this is a mid-year update, it is the first of two updates that are provided to board members during the fiscal year. The picture shown on this slide is of the reconfigured New River Channel where it meets the Salton Sea. The concrete structure is a weir which will mix the river water with the Salton Sea water to support the Species Conservation Habitat Project, also referred to as the SCH, an important project which you will hear more about later in the presentation. Next slide. Before we discuss the program-specific information, I would like to refresh the board on the objectives from the strategic plan. Each of the programs has integrated these objectives into their activities. The first objective is programmatic activities, including permits, planning, and enforcement. Our permitting, enforcement, and planning activities must be directed toward the protection of water quality. This includes surface and groundwater monitoring to characterize these bodies of water to protect their beneficial reuses, applying the enforcement policy to non-compliant discharges in a timely manner, and utilizing general permits to expediently address non-point source pollution and preserve water resources, such as the municipal stormwater and recycled water permits. Next slide, please. The second objective is strategic engagement with underserved and underrepresented communities. Following the policies set forth by the State Water Board and utilizing the tools of technology, such as hybrid and remote meetings, we continue the work of engaging and reaching out to historically underserved communities. Through efforts directed toward tribal engagement, attending community meetings, and inviting participation from representatives of these groups, our staff work toward building trust and relationships with these important members of our service area. Next slide, please. The third objective is internal process improvements, such as training and engagement of staff, effective communication between units and programs, and across all staff and management levels, streamlining workflow processes and achieving greater efficiency. In my capacity, Strategic Objective 3 is a priority I will continue to work on, providing regular updates in my executive officer's report at each of these board meetings. Next slide, please. And now I will hand it off to our first speaker, Logan Robb, our MPDS program manager.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board, members of the public. Again, my name is Logan Robb. I'm a senior environmental scientist and the Regional Water Board's National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or NPDS, unit manager. Today, I'm providing an overview of the unit's programs and our progress in reaching our performance targets for fiscal year 2024-2025. I will also provide updates on three priority projects the unit has been working on this year. Wrong slide. Next slide. The NPDS unit handles the permitting and oversight of facilities and projects that discharge to surface waters. The unit's wastewater program regulates discharges from wastewater treatment facilities. The unit's stormwater program regulates stormwater discharges from industrial facilities, construction projects, and urban areas that operate municipal separate storm sewer systems, or MS4s. The unit's concentrated animal feeding operation, or CAFO program, regulates discharges from dairies, feedlots, heifer ranches, and calf nurseries, and the 401 Water Quality Certification Dredged or Fill Waste Discharge Requirements Program permits projects that discharge dredge or fill materials to waters of the U.S. and waters of the state. The unit staff have been working hard this year and have made progress toward meeting our fiscal year 2024-2025 performance targets. The wastewater program's performance targets this year are to perform 7 wastewater treatment plant inspections, renew 3 permits, and renew 1 general permit. To date, staff have performed 1 wastewater treatment plant inspection, renewed our general order for low threat discharges in July of 2024, and renewed 1 wastewater permit today with El Centro's NPDS permit renewal. The stormwater program's performance targets this year are to inspect 43 construction sites, 20 industrial facilities, and inspect 1 municipal stormwater program. To date, staff have completed inspections of 21 construction sites, including 2 additional inspections not reported on this table, and 5 industrial facilities. The CAFO program's performance targets this year are to inspect 9 facilities. Staff have completed 4 inspections. And the Regional Water Board has issued 4 401 water quality certifications and adopted 6 dredged or fill waste discharge requirements, 8 including the cobalt and Atwell dredge and fill waste discharge requirements adopted earlier. No performance targets are set for these. They're issued as applications are submitted and processed. Next slide. I will now talk about other projects the NPDS unit has been working on this year, which are the permitting for the New River Improvement Project, permitting for Salt and Sea Management Program projects, and continued outreach to the public through a new programmatic fact sheet. Next slide. The New River Improvement Project strategic plan prepared by the California-Mexico Border Relations Council provided a series of recommendations to deal with New River water quality problems in different reaches. The 5 different reaches shown here on the map begin downstream in Mexicali at the bottom of the figure and end at the Salton Sea at the top. Next slide. Infrastructure recommendations for the New River in Reach 1, the Calexico Reach, were recommended to divert New River flow from near the international boundary to downstream of the city of Calexico and pump treated disinfected wastewater back into the New River to replace the diverted flow. The components included a trash screen and diversion structure, shown here in the bottom right corner of the image near the international boundary, a bypass conveyance system, shown as the red line snaking from the right corner near the international boundary to the upper left corner near the All-American Canal overcrossing, and a pump back system, shown as the green line starting near the Calexico Wastewater Treatment Plant in the center of the image and snaking to the bottom right to near the international boundary. Next slide. To carry out the work, the City of Calexico obtained 3 permits from the Regional Water Board. In January of 2022, the project was issued a 401 water quality certification for in-water work and discharges of dredge or fill materials. In July of 2023, the project was enrolled for coverage under the Statewide Construction General Stormwater Permit for construction and grading activities at the project site. Also in July of 2023, the project was enrolled for coverage under the Regional Board's low-threat general order for discharges of wastewater resulting from the installation of the recommended components. Once construction is completed, the MPDS permit for the Calexico Wastewater Treatment Plant will need to be revised to provide for an additional discharge point to provide return flow into the New River. Staff are working on the permit renewal and intend to bring this before you in March or April of 2025. These permits align with the Water Board's Strategic Objective 1 by permitting the project to address the public health threat to Calexico residents posed by water flowing across the border from Mexico. Next slide. REACH 1 projects have been completed or are nearing completion, including the trash screen and diversion structure shown in the upper left image, pipe work for the bypass and pump back systems in the upper right image, and the pump back station with pump equipment and piping in the lower images. The city reports that all work is expected to be completed mid-January 2025. Next slide. I will now talk about the Salton Sea Management Program projects. The Salton Sea Management Program plan included a 10-year plan to improve conditions at the sea by constructing habitat and dust suppression projects around the sea. Most projects proposed in the 10-year plan involve dredge or fill activities that require permits issued by the Regional Water Board, including 401 water quality certifications and or dredged or fill waste discharge requirements. Water Board staff meet biweekly with Natural Resources Agency staff to discuss current and future projects and their permitting needs. Aquatic habitat restoration projects are proposed in areas near the New Alamo and Whitewater Rivers, shown in the blue on the map figure. Aquatic habitat restoration projects consist of one or more large ponds that may be subdivided into smaller ponds. The purple highlighted area on the southern edge of the sea is the location of the Species Conservation Habitat Project, a habitat restoration project currently being constructed, which I will discuss shortly. Dust suppression and restoration areas, shown in green, target the most emissive exposed lake bed areas as the sea recedes, where habitat and dust suppression projects could be located. Dust suppression projects are intended to reduce the emission of airborne particles from an exposed lake bed using a variety of dust control treatments. The Vegetation Enhancement Project is a dust suppression project currently in operation that I will also discuss shortly. Next slide. The Species Conservation Habitat Project is the first of many larger-scale aquatic habitat restoration projects with approximately 5,000 acres of ponds to be constructed to restore piscivorous bird habitat lost to the seas, increasing salinity and reduced areas, and additionally to reduce dust from exposed lake bed. The Regional Water Board issued a 401 water quality certification for the project in December of 2013. Since then, the 401 has been amended 3 times to provide for pond expansions, the expansion of a west interceptor drain, and a drain interceptor ditch on the south side of the project area. The most recent amendment was issued in June of 2024 to provide for an additional expansion to East Pond, shown as the green highlighted area number 1 on the map. The picture in the upper right image is an enlarged image of East Pond 1. The picture on the bottom left shows the construction of the pond's berm. Additional pond expansions are planned for 2025 for the west and central ponds, shown as area numbers 3 and 1 respectively on the map. Other wetlands or ponds are also planned for a couple of other areas around the sea. The pond expansions and the new ponds will require water board permits. Next slide. The vegetation enhancement project is a dust suppression project designed to enhance the growth of existing native plants and promote new growth in currently open areas. The project areas include the clubhouse, Thule Wash, and Bombay Beach West sites, shown on the upper image or upper map. Native plants and seeds are used to grow vegetation on site. Grass bales are placed on site to protect the growing plants from wind and dust. Once established, the vegetation will prevent soil erosion and reduce dust emission from these sites. The Regional Water Board issued dredge or fill waste discharge requirements for the Vegetation Enhancement Project in December 2021. Water Board staff have been discussing the expansion of the clubhouse area with Natural Resources Agency staff, and it's to be determined if this will require an amendment to the existing waste discharge requirements or new dredge or fill waste discharge requirements. Next slide. And finally, staff updated our programmatic fact sheet for the MPDES permitting activities planned for this fiscal year. The updated fact sheet was posted on our webpage in the announcement section. Staff also sent copies of the fact sheet in English and Spanish to tribal contacts, local governments, non-governmental organizations, and you. Differences between this year's and last year's fact sheet are a better, more informative map figure shown in the center image and more focused outreach to tribal communities most affected by our permits for the Coachella Valley and Imperial Valley areas. This effort is part of the Regional Water Board's outreach activities intended to provide equitable, culturally relevant community outreach to promote meaningful civic engagement from potentially impacted communities and aligns with the Water Board's strategic objective 2, strategic engagement with underserved and underrepresented communities. This concludes my updates. I will now hand it over to Emma McCorkle, the Water Quality Standards Unit Manager, to update you on her unit's activities. Thank you.
Logan, I have one question for you on stormwater construction facilities inspections. Are those new facilities or are they maintaining existing facilities? Because I noticed the equipment near El Dorado and Fred Waring down in the storm channel, at probably running through Indian Wells.
El Dorado. I think that, I think there's different phases of construction. I think that there's the initial grading, phase, and then there's the, I think it, they call it the, what's that when they, the vertical construction phase, and then when they do final site closure. A lot of the inspections that the stormwater team is inspecting for are notices of termination when the project is completed. But, we could always inspect facilities based on complaints or, if we do want to go out there and inspect during, the different phases of the construction.
Thank you.
Thank you. And so what was that area again? El Dorado?
It was El Dorado and near Fred Waring. I think the Indian Wells Golf Resort, the golf course, it runs through the golf course there.
Okay, thank you. I'll take a look at it.
Thanks.
Good morning, Chair Satin and members of the board. My name is Emma McCorkle, and I'm a senior environmental scientist with the Water Quality Standards and Nonpoint Source Unit. The unit is the planning group for the region. The unit has basin planning, total maximum daily load, integrated report, nonpoint source, and irrigated lands programs. These programs have large projects that take years to complete due to the amount of research, external approvals, and public processes. The unit updates the basin plan and determines what water quality standards are best for the region. Using those standards, the integrated report assesses and evaluates collected data and determines impairments in the region's waters. Once the impairments have been identified, TMDLs, or total maximum daily loads, can be developed to set limits on pollutant discharges and identify sources of those pollutants. One of the main ways that we implement TMDLs is through our 4 agricultural general orders and the coalitions authorized through them. These orders outline monitoring and best practices that should be followed to reduce pollutants entering surface waters. The Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program is the largest component of the Nonpoint Source Program. Next slide, please. Performance targets for the Water Quality Standards Unit are only for basin planning and TMDL programs. No other programs in the unit are represented. One of our targets for fiscal year 23-24 was rolled over into the current year as it was not completed. This was due to issues with external peer review process. The project is the Alamo River Chloride Indicator Bacteria and Toxicity TMDL, which has now completed peer review. Staff are working on the response to reviewers and any revisions needed to the staff report. This TMDL will tentatively be considered by you guys in May of 2025. This accounts for 1 TMDL and 4 pollutant water body combinations that you see on the screen. The other target is the New River Ammonia and Toxicity TMDL. This TMDL is being prepared for external peer review, and as such, we don't have a tentative board hearing date yet. This project accounts for one TMGL and two pollutant water body combinations. The Imperial Valley Pyrethroid TMDL was adopted by the Regional Board in July of 2024 and therefore counts towards this year's fiscal targets. So you'll see under achieved, that is that TMDL. It will be considered by the State Water Board for approval next March 2025. No basin plan amendments are scheduled to be considered by you guys this fiscal year, so that is at zero. Next slide, please. We had a few accomplishments this year. As I stated in the previous slide, the Imperial Valley Pyrethroid Pesticides TMDL was adopted and will be up for State Board consideration next year. Staff also continued salt and sea sampling with two samplings this fiscal year in July and November. During the November sampling, we were able to get a point in the north end of the sea near the Whitewater River Delta, in addition to the points that we've been sampling at the south end. We have also started sampling the species conservation habitats for water quality. Our first sampling was in October. This sampling is in support of designating beneficial uses and will continue for the next 2 years. Next slide, please. For the remainder of the fiscal year, we intend to take two projects to the State Water Board for consideration, the aforementioned Imperial Valley Pyrethroid Pesticides, and the tribal beneficial uses, statewide mercury provisions, and administrative updates basin plan amendment, which was adopted by this board in June 2024. We are tentatively scheduled to go before the State Water Board in April of 2025. That concludes our unit's work and status updates. Next is Angela Garcia with the cleanup unit. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board, and members of the public. My name is Angela Garcia, and I am the program manager for the site cleanup unit and the salt and nutrient management planning program. My program consists of Fawn Lee and Thomas Brown, both water resource control engineers, Teresa Ilari, environmental scientist, Monica Aragon, Jesse Del Mastro, Jeffrey Fitzsimmons, engineering geologist. Program staff work on cleanup sites to ensure that projects continue to move forward towards a path for closure and who are vital in meeting the forecasted annual performance measures. You don't get to see them very often, so I thought it would be a great opportunity to meet the site cleanup team. Last board meeting, Monica presented on the site cleanup process, the types of projects our program oversees, and the life cycle of a project from site investigation, cleanup activities, and requirements for a site to receive closure. I hope you found Monica's presentation informative. Staff managed four projects. First is the underground storage tank program, which addresses unauthorized releases of petroleum from an underground storage tank or the distribution piping. Contaminants associated with this program consist only of petroleum and are investigated and evaluated based on the requirements included in the low threat underground storage tank case closure policy. Then there's a site cleanup program where environmental investigations evaluate contaminants in sediments, subsurface soils, and groundwater. Contaminants will vary based on site operations and may include solvents, pesticides, heavy metals, volatile organic compounds, and other contaminants used in the type of industrial facility. This program also includes surface spills or leaks from above ground storage tanks. My third program is the Department of Defense. Here, projects are specific to an unauthorized release that has occurred only at a military site and has both underground storage tank and site cleanup projects. Lastly, we have the Salt and Nutrient Management Planning Program developed in accordance with the state's recycled water policy. I will be talking more on this program on a separate slide. Next slide, please. In this slide, I have summarized our forecasted performance goals for this fiscal year. This fiscal year, currently there are 17 active sites within the Department of Defense program. This fiscal year, staff did not identify any projects that would move from site investigation into remediation, and no sites which would be eligible for closure. In site cleanup, currently there are 20 active projects. This fiscal year, staff did not identify any sites that would move from site investigation into remediation, and one site was identified as eligible for closure. The underground storage tank program currently has 50 active projects. This fiscal year, one project was identified to move from site investigation into remediation, and three sites were identified as potentially eligible for closure. Next slide, please. Although the site cleanup program identified one site that would meet closure requirements, since July, two sites have become eligible for closure. For these two projects, staff evaluated the soil, soil gas, and groundwater and determined that the site met closure under the low threat underground storage tank case closure criteria. Staff summarized all the data into a case closure summary, uploaded to GeoTracker, and included it as an attachment for review during the 60-day public comment period. The first project is the Coca-Cola Bottling Company, located in the Cedarville Central. A case closure summary was completed in August and was public notice with the public comment period ending January 14, 2025. The second project is the Pasta Shop Number 1, located in the city of Thermo. A case closure summary was completed in October and was public notice with the comment period ending December 24th. If no comments are received for these projects above, Regional Water Board will issue a letter to abandon all groundwater wells and soil vapor wells located within the project area. Once those activities are complete, Regional Water Board will issue a no further action case closure letter. Oops. Next slide, please. This is a new site that came to our program through the California Office of Emergency Services earlier this year. The Citizens Energy Corporation responded to a spill of a transformer oil which leaked over the course of approximately 1 week. The contaminants of concern include total petroleum hydrocarbons from transformer soybean oil. The volume released on site was estimated to be approximately 275 gallons. A work plan was submitted to the Regional Water Board to better define the impacted area and to collect groundwater samples. This project team is very eager to get the project cleaned up and receive closure. Next slide, please. Now let's talk about the performance measures for the underground storage tank program. During this fiscal year, one site has been identified to move into active remediation. This site is the Imperial Irrigation District, located in the city of Imperial. Submitted a corrective action plan, which describes the selected remedy as removal of petroleum-impacted soil. Currently, additional investigation is being conducted to further delineate the extent of contamination. A revised corrective action plan will be submitted to include a more accurate area of impacted soil, reduce the overall cost on cleanup activities, reduce transport and soil disposal, and volume of clean soil needed to backfill. Once the corrective action plan is approved, a fact sheet will be circulated to invite the community to ask questions regarding the environmental sampling and propose cleanup activities through a 30-day public comment period. If no comments are received, the excavation activities will begin. Next slide, please. For this fiscal year, within the underground storage tank program, Three sites were identified to move from site assessment remediation to site closure. Since July, one site has already met site closure, and three additional sites are in progress. Similar to the site cleanup, staff summarize all the data into a case closure summary, upload to GeoTracker, and include it as an attachment for review during the 60-day public comment period. The first project is Blocker Transportation, located in the city of Blythe. A case closure summary was approved and a public comment period ended on September 6th. No comments were received, and the site received a case closure letter on September 16th. Second project is the USA Self-Serve Douglas Station, located in the city of Blythe. A case closure summary was prepared in June and was given a 60-day public notice, which also ended on September 6th. No comments were received, and a letter was mailed out on October 12 requesting to abandon all groundwater monitoring wells. This project is special in that it's an orphan site, and to abandon the groundwater wells, Regional Water Board will require a court access to enter onto the property. Then we have the former Wave Crest located in the city of Mecca. A case closure summary was prepared in October and public noticed, with the public comment period ending on December 24th. Lastly, we have the 10-4 Corporation located in the city of Needles. A case closure summary was prepared in November and public comment period ending on June 20th. For both Wavecrest and 10-4 sites, if no comments are received during the public comment period, then staff will send a letter requesting to remove all groundwater wells and soil ripper wells, which will be the last step in the process to receive case closure. Next slide, please. The site cleanup program continues to participate in community outreach for all project sites where fieldwork activities are planned, and has focused on disadvantaged communities and unrepresentative communities throughout our region. Fieldwork notices and fact sheets are developed in both English and Spanish and include a simple map with depictions of sampling locations. They are circulated to surrounding properties and site occupants 7 days prior to any fieldwork activities and posted on the site during implementation of fieldwork. The development of these fieldwork notices has increased transparency, accessibility to project information, project contacts, and access to project documents. Recently, fieldwork notices have included QR codes for those who want to scan and get information on the site instantaneously. Next slide, please. As I mentioned earlier in my presentation, in addition to site cleanup projects, I also manage the salt and nutrient management planning program. Salt and nutrient management plans are developed in accordance with the state recycled water policy, in which three groundwater basins have been identified as priority basins for the development of salt and nutrient management plans. They are the Mojave area, 29 Palms area, and the Coachella Valley groundwater basins. For the Mojave area, the Salt Nutrient Management Planning Program efforts is administered through the Regional Water Board Control Board, Lahontan Region. Next slide, please. For the Coachella Valley Water Basin, the Regional Water Board approved the Coachella Valley Salt and Nutrient Management Plan Development Work Plan in October of 2021. Since that time, the Coachella Valley Groundwater Basin and the Salt and Nutrient Management Planning Agencies have submitted updates to the work plan and have developed a technical advisory committee that includes public outreach and stakeholder engagement throughout the salt and nutrient management planning process. This fiscal year, Regional Water Board staff attended two technical advisory committee meetings with the Coachella Valley Salt Nutrient Management Planning Agencies. Updates were presented on the implementation of the work plan, task 1 through 4. Task one was to characterize total dissolved solids with nitrate mass loading to the Coachella Valley groundwater basin. The objective of this task is to describe and quantify the individual components of total dissolved solids and nitrate mass loading to groundwater across the basin over a recent historic period. Task two is to characterize groundwater quality. The objective of this task is to characterize current conditions for total dissolved solids and nitrate concentrations in groundwater as of 2020, including an analysis of time history of total dissolved solids and nitrate concentrations in groundwater to current conditions. Task three is to delineate draft management zones and describe metrics to characterize beneficial use protection. The objectives of this task are to delineate draft groundwater management zones, describe the existing and potential future beneficial uses of groundwater within each management zone, and define a metric that will be used to estimate ambient total dissolved solids and nitrate concentrations in each management zone and assess beneficial use protection. The Regional Water Board has not committed to formally incorporating the groundwater management zones drafted by the Coachella Valley Salt Nutrient Management Planning Agencies as part of any future basin plan amendment. Lastly, Task 4 developed a technical approach for forecasting total dissolved solids and nitrate concentrations in groundwater. The objectives of this task are to define the most appropriate and efficient technical approach to forecast TDS solid concentrations in groundwater. The Regional Water Board has not yet committed to establishment of any numerical total dissolved solid water quality objectives proposed by the Coachella Valley Salt Nutrient Management Planning Agencies. Any new water quality objectives will be independently developed by the Regional Water Board after consideration of all factors specified in Water Code Section 13241, and ultimately adopted via a basin plan amendment subject to subsequent review approved by the State Water Resources Control Board. Regional Water Board staff will be attending a community workshop tomorrow at the Coachella Valley Water District. The workshop will present the progress made by the Coachella Valley Salt Nutrient Management Plan since its 2023 kickoff meeting workshop. This session will have a special focus on the proposed management zones and the metrics being developed to ensure the protection of beneficial water uses described in Technical Memorandum Task 3. Next slide, please. Lastly, we have the 29 Palms area. The 29 Palms Water District has been implementing a groundwater monitoring plan for portions of the Joshua Tree, 29 Palms Valley, and Dale Valley basins since 2019. The most recent 2023 annual groundwater monitoring report dated May 31st, 2024, includes a summary of activities for the year and includes a historical groundwater analytical data from 2015, completing a 10-year summary of groundwater analytical data. Staff have requested a meeting with the 29 Palms Water Districts and their consultants prior to the submittal of the 2024 annual groundwater monitoring report to discuss the need for the development of a salt and nutrient management plan work plan. This summarizes the activities for the salt and nutrient management planning and the site cleanup program. I look forward to presenting the site cleanup accomplishments and updates on the salt and nutrient management planning in July of 2025. Now let me present to you Jose Cortez, Supervisor of the Land Disposal Unit. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board, and everyone in attendance. My name is Jose Cortez, a senior water resource control engineer of the Regional Water Board staff and program manager for the land disposal unit. In this part of the mid-year update, I'll be talking about the target goals and accomplishments for the land disposal unit in the discharge to land, land disposal, California-Mexico border, and new river sampling programs. We'll also be taking a look at some of the projects that the unit is currently working on. So before moving on, I'd like to make a distinction between the discharge to land and the land disposal programs, because the names are somewhat similar and can be a little nebulous. Discharges to land are typically discharges to unlined percolation evaporation ponds, where the discharge can and often does reach groundwater. They're regulated under the California Water Code. The water quality objectives for groundwater in the basin plan and the drinking water standards in Title 22 of the California Code of Regulations. The land disposal discharges are to lined ponds or landfills that are regulated under Title 27 of the California Water Code, I'm sorry, California Code of Regulations. These waste discharges are not allowed to reach or contaminate groundwater. So with that clarification, next slide, please. Okay, this slide shows the target goals for the discharge to land program in fiscal year 24-25. 43 inspections are planned, 9 have been completed. This is changing all the time, so that number's actually up to 10, I'm sorry. 5 waste discharge requirement orders are scheduled for update. No updates have yet been adopted, but all of them are in draft development stage, and 2 are very close to completed drafts. 6 notices of applicability are scheduled for this year. 1 has been completed. The next slide provides some information about the project and the notice of applicability. Of the remaining 5, 4 are currently being drafted, and the other one is still yet to be started. So finally, 2 local agency management programs, otherwise known as LAMPs, are scheduled to be updated this fiscal year. So a minor revision to Riverside County's LAMP has been approved. The resolution approving the revision was adopted at the November 12th board meeting last month. And the San Bernardino County's LAMP is scheduled to be updated later this fiscal year. Just as a side note, the Lahontan Regional Water Board, that would be Region 6, is the lead agency for San Bernardino County's LAMP. However, since a significant portion of San Bernardino is within the Region 7's boundaries, our office has a critical role in the update of that LAMP. Next slide, please. So one of the projects that the unit worked on this year is the Sunnylands Administration Operations Campus Recycled Water Treatment System. This slide shows some of the treatment units at the Sunnylands facility. The facility is located at the former Annenberg Estate on Bob Hope Drive in Rancho Mirage. The property is now operated as a tourist and visitor center, and it's run by the Annenberg Foundation Trust at Sunnylands. When the property was converted to a tourist center, the on-site wastewater treatment system was converted to a recycled water treatment facility. This project didn't come before the board for adoption because it's regulated under a general order, and the waste discharge requirements are implemented through a notice of applicability. The general order contains the provisions for the use of recycled water. Sunnylands proposed to use recycled water for outdoor landscape irrigation and indoor toilet flush water. So there's a dual plumbed water system for the buildings at the facility. The photo on the bottom left shows some of the tertiary treatment and chlorine disinfection units. And the photo on the bottom right are hydroponic reactors that are used for microbe removal. So as a backup system, in the event the facility does not use recycled water, or if the recycled water does not meet the limitations for use as recycled water, the facility also has a leach field for the disposal of treated wastewater. Next slide. Okay, so in the land disposal program for fiscal year 24-25, the unit's goals are to perform 23 landfill inspections. 5 have been completed. Also, 19 other land disposal facility inspections are planned, and 1 of those has been completed. We also have 1 landfill and 1 other land disposal facility waste discharge requirement that are scheduled for update this fiscal year. Both of those are in draft form. One of them, for Western Mesquite Mine, which we're going to see on the next slide, has been prepared and is now going through internal review in the office. 4 enrollments are scheduled in Title 27 general orders. The enrollments are issued as notices of applicability. These include 1 closed landfill, 1 applicant in the biosolids general order, which it will be the first one in our region, and the other 2 are notice of applicability updates in the composting general order. And next slide. Well, this image shows an aerial view of the Western Mesquite mine layout. The facility is a gold mine located east of Brawley on approximately 5,200 acres of mixed land ownership, including private, federal, which is Bureau of Land Management, and State Lands Commission land. The owners of the facility recently proposed an expansion to the mine and requested an update to their current waste discharge requirements. So the updated waste discharge requirements for this facility are scheduled for consideration in this fiscal year. Next slide. So this slide shows another of the facilities that have their WDR scheduled for adoption or update this year. This is the Allied Imperial Landfill. The photo on the left shows the working face of the landfill where municipal solid waste is disposed of. And the photo on the right is a transfer station for construction and demolition debris and inert materials. So the facility also has a green waste transfer station for compostable materials. Inert materials and green waste are transferred offsite for other uses to reduce the amount of material disposed of at the landfill. Construction and inert debris are typically used as fill materials, and green waste is now commonly being composted. Next slide. Okay, so the land disposal unit also manages the California-Mexico border program. One of the programs overseen in part by the unit is the New River Improvement Project. The project is currently in phase 2, which is construction. This project was described previously by Logan Robb of the MPDS unit, so I won't be discussing it in much detail. In addition, the Regional Water Board staff attend various meetings throughout the year related to water quality-related border issues and infrastructure projects. The Regional Water Board is a member of the International Boundary and Water Commission's Binational Technical Committee that meets every 2 months. Members of the Binational Technical Committee provide updates on programs and projects on both sides of the border. Regional Water Board staff Julia Mesas and Adriana Godinez has attended the meetings in person since July 2023. Adriana is no longer with our office, and I attended a committee meeting in September 2024 with Julia. We toured the city of Mexicali to observe some of the city's sanitary sewer collection system and municipal wastewater treatment systems. Also, the California-Mexico Border Relations Council convenes annually. A meeting of the council was held on November 7, 2024. Regional Water Board staff Julia Mesas attended the meeting virtually this year. The California-Mexico Border Relations Council is broader in scope than the Binational Technical Committee in that it includes the city of Tijuana, the San Diego area, and the Tijuana River. So it encompasses both of our regions, Region 9 and Region 7, and projects are within both of the regions. Next slide. Okay, so this slide shows an image of the New River Improvement Project's diversion structure in the city of Calexico. This component of the project went into operation earlier in 2024. However, the automated trash removal units have not yet been installed, so it's not quite complete. The photo shows the trash screen installed at the diversion structure, and solid waste can be seen accumulating at the screen. It was reported to the Regional Water Board that the trash screen is now being cleaned manually at least every 2 weeks, but sometimes more often depending on the amount of trash coming across the border. The cost per cleaning event is reported to be approximately $8,000. Trash removed from the screens is hauled away to the Calexico landfill. Next slide. This slide shows some features that we observed on the September 2024 City of Mexicali tour. The photo on the upper left shows the Mexico drain in the process of being dredged. In a discussion with the staff on the dredging project team, we were informed that the drain is dredged about every 2 months and sometimes once a month, depending on how much solid waste accumulates in the drain. The drain is one of the larger tributaries to the New River in the city of Mexicali. Solid waste is collected, as you can see on the site in the embankment, and is hauled away by a waste hauler to a landfill. And the photo on the bottom right is a photo of the Zaragoza wastewater treatment plant. The plant was undergoing upgrades at the time of our visit, and everything appeared to be operating okay, as far as we could see. Next slide. And finally, this photo shows the New River sampling location the new sampling location for the New River at the international boundary. Sampling station is upstream of the diversion structure that we saw in one of the previous slides. The New River sampling is performed by Regional Water Board staff on a monthly basis. The sampling program is managed by the land disposal unit, but the technical staff of the entire office participate in the sampling collection events. The New River sampling program is part of the Salton Sea Management Program, as the New River's flow discharges entirely into the Salton Sea. So that concludes the mid-year update on the land disposal unit's work items and this year's project target goals and ongoing projects. And with that, I will turn the presentation over to Cassandra Owens, my supervisor, who will provide an update on enforcement. Cassandra?
Thank you, Jose. Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board, and members of the public. I am Cassandra Owens, the Assistant Executive Officer. Today, I'm going to give a brief overview of the enforcement activities that have occurred since July 1st, 2024. The enforcement program is integrated into every program in the regional board and is granted its authority by the California Water Code. Enforcement is a critical ingredient to creating the deterrent needed to encourage the regulated community to anticipate, identify, and correct violations. One of the tools we use to guide the enforcement process is the enforcement policy. Next slide, please. The enforcement policy was developed by the state board. It has been recently updated, and the update became effective on November 7, 2024. The policy provides a step-by-step process for taking enforcement actions that are transparent, fair, firm, and consistent. Progressive enforcement is one of the most important components of the policy. The progressive enforcement process relies on an escalating series of actions. These actions may begin with a phone call after reviewing a monitoring report or a discussion during a site inspection. Subsequently, an email or a notice of violation may be issued to clearly identify the problem and request compliance. Next slide, please. This slide shows the notices of violation that have been issued in Region 7 since July 1st, 2024. First, five notices of violation have been issued in the Cannabis Cultivation Program. These notices of violation, or NOVs, were issued to facilities that were not in compliance with the general permit or the waiver for indoor cannabis grows. Most of the permitted operations in this region are indoor cannabis grows. In the land disposal program, 42 notices of violation have been issued. The notices covered such violations such as the failure to submit timely reports, failure to monitor as per the waste discharge requirements, and violations of effluent limits. In the construction stormwater program, notices of violation were issued to a total of 147 permittees for failure to submit the annual report, which was due by July 1st, 2024. A second notice of violation was issued to 87 permittees who did not respond to the initial notice, bringing the total to 234 notices of violation for this program. 18 notices of violation were issued to industrial stormwater permittees that did not submit the required annual report. Subsequently, five notices were issued to permittees that did not comply with the first notice. A total of 23 notices of violation were issued to general industrial stormwater permittees. Next slide, please. Each year, staff work on a list of enforcement priorities. The enforcement priorities are listed on this slide. The first priority listed is mandatory minimum penalties. The enforcement policy requires that mandatory minimum penalties associated with National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permits are addressed within 18 months of the violation report. Regional board staff review violations quarterly and as soon as possible issue expedited payment letters for violations noted. The second priority is sanitary sewer overflows. Some reports of overflows come from the discharger. Others come from the Office of Emergency Services Hazardous Materials Spill Report, and still others from interested parties. After staff is made aware of a spill, they request additional information, perform a site inspection, and follow the steps outlined in the enforcement policy. The third priority is facilities with persistent violations. There are several land disposal permittees that have reported violations for several years. These are primarily small wastewater treatment facilities that have not been maintained. Regional board staff, working with staff from the Office of Enforcement, continued enforcement efforts to bring these facilities into compliance. Next slide, please. This slide presents a summary of the efforts to address effluent limit violations with mandatory minimum penalties, the first priority that was listed. Mandatory minimum penalty provisions are required by the California Water Code for specified violations of National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permits. These permits are for discharges to surface water bodies or waters of the United States. The California Water Code requires a mandatory minimum penalty of $3,000 be assessed for each serious violation. $3,000 is also assessed for each non-serious violation not counting the first three violations over a 180-day period. Listed on this slide are permits with mandatory minimum penalties that have been settled since July. First, we have Kent SeaTech Corporation Fish Farm, which was assessed a $30,000 mandatory minimum penalty for 10 violations of E. coli and oil and grease. Next, we have Imperial Irrigation District's El Centro Generating Station, which was assessed a $21,000 mandatory minimum penalty for 7 violations of cyanide, selenium, and total suspended solids. Next slide, please. The second item on our priority list is sanitary sewer overflows. Sanitary sewer overflows are untreated or partially treated domestic, municipal, commercial, and/or industrial waste, including sewage sludge, and any mixture of these waste conveyed in a sanitary sewer system. Sewage contains high levels of suspended solids, non-digested organic waste, pathogenic bacteria, viruses, toxic pollutants, nutrients, and other harmful pollutants. These photos illustrate a sanitary sewer overflow situation. Next slide, please. Listed on this slide is the most recent sanitary sewer overflow case that has been settled. It is for the Coachella Valley Water District, which was adopted by this regional board on September 10th, the settlement agreement for that particular spill. The discharger agreed to an administrative civil liability to resolve the violations associated with the September 22, 2022 sanitary sewer overflow that spilled over 128,000 gallons of untreated wastewater into the Whitewater River stormwater channel. The spill violated the facility's wastewater discharge regulations, requirements, and the spill also violated the sanitary sewer system waste discharge requirements, which requires the discharger to properly convey, store, and treat domestic wastewater. Next slide, please. The third priority listed is addressing facilities with persistent violations. Listed on this slide are two of the facilities identified with years of violations. The first item listed is a cease and desist order for Verdant Incilia, LLC, for the Fairfield Inn, located in 29 Palms. This was adopted by this board originally on October 10th, 2023. Staff from the Office of Enforcement continued oversight of this particular facility, and oversight revealed that the facility continued to have violations of the cease and desist order. A notice of violation was issued, and subsequently a compressed administrative civil liability order was issued to require compliance. A second facility, Turtle Rock 29 Homeowners Association, was issued a cease and desist order to require the discharger to complete facility upgrades to comply with the waste discharge requirements for that facility. Next slide, please. This slide lists some of the other enforcement actions that we have completed. These actions were signed by the executive officer under delegated authority. First, the Palm Springs Unified School District was issued an administrative civil liability for failing to submit timely monitoring reports. The school district had not submitted monitoring reports for a number of years, and so we went into settlement negotiations with them regarding that. The next item is for Verdant Incilia, the Fairfield Inn and Suites in 29 Palms. As stated previously, this facility was issued a compressed administrative civil liability of $21,552 for violations of the cease and desist order, including failure to submit a required report and violations of a laundry pH limit. Next slide, please. This slide lists some of the board enforcement actions that have been taken. As a result of progressive enforcement and assistance from the Office of Enforcement, a cease and desist order for the Turtle Rock 29 Homeowners Association that includes a time schedule order for the wastewater treatment facility to come into compliance with the requirements was issued for this facility. The regional board also has adopted 4 cease and desist orders that include a timeline for homeowners in Yucca Valley to cease discharges from their on-site wastewater treatment systems and come into compliance with the Yucca Valley on-site wastewater treatment system prohibition. Today, the board approved 3 additional cease and desist orders that require compliance with that prohibition. Next slide, please. Enforcement staff have also identified some challenges associated with enforcement. First, I'd like to talk a little bit about the settlement negotiations. Enforcement proceedings with settlement negotiations take a considerable amount of time. When determining the path forward with settlement negotiations, staff utilize the enforcement policy to evaluate each compliance issue. Once both parties agree on a penalty amount, discussions begin regarding implementation of a supplemental environmental project, compliance plan, or enhanced compliance action. A supplemental environmental project is an environmentally beneficial project that a person subject to an enforcement action can voluntarily agree to, and this project offsets a portion of the civil penalty associated with the violations. SEPs are used for water quality protection efforts, especially in disadvantaged communities. The portion of the penalty offset by a SEP is usually limited to 50%, except in disadvantaged communities where it is possible to use up to 100% of the penalty for the SEP. Regional Water Board staff spends a considerable amount of time assisting the dischargers with identifying projects that will be acceptable and with developing the scope of the supplemental environmental project. This process can double the amount of time required to close a case. A second issue identified is staffing. Region 7 has 1 water resource control engineer, Michael Perez, that is dedicated to enforcement actions. Enforcement staff work with staff from the other programs along with counsel from the Office of Enforcement. Most recently, we have been able to utilize Wendy Wiles, staff from the Office of Enforcement, to address enforcement issues associated with the small wastewater treatment facilities. That resource is no longer available to assist because of budget considerations. Staff also had assistance from basin planning on the Yucca Valley on-site wastewater treatment system prohibition enforcement efforts. That support is no longer available. These staffing changes will affect the number of cases that we will be able to complete in the coming months. This concludes my mid-year summary of enforcement activities. Next slide, please. Thank you for your attention. Staff from all of the programs that have presented here are available, and we are happy to answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
Hi, Cassandra. Hi. I have a question for you.
Sure.
On the enforcement policy, you say the actions are fair, firm, consistent, and transparent. Is that between us and the violator to be fair and firm? I mean, it sounds difficult to be fair and yet firm.
Well, by using the policy, we are consistently implementing the policy the same way for each particular case, in each case. That way they can look at other individuals that have had similar violations and note whether or not the requirements put upon them are similar to those put upon others with similar situations. So yes, we do strive to have them firm and fair between us and between the discharges as well. Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I have a few questions for you as well, Cassandra. The administrative fees, not the administrative fees, I'm sorry, the enforcement fees that we're collecting for these mandatory minimum payments, do those go into supporting more enforcement actions? Like, is that available to staff up enforcement capacity, or are those going to a general fund at the state level to be dispersed?
They go to the general fund at the state board. No, we don't get them back. The funds that actually stay in the region are those that are devoted to a SEP or a compliance project, right, or some project like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And is Mr. Perez also the only person that's coordinating on the SEPs and whatnot as well, or do those get, are other staff from other departments able to coordinate on aspects of those?
Yes. And I don't mean to insinuate that he's working totally alone. No, he's not. Of course, I'm involved in every case as well. And yes, he will still get assistance from the other staff. But the other staff also have, sure, other duties that they're doing. They're writing permits. They are doing inspections. They are issuing notices of violation in some cases. So they are not dedicated to,
right,
enforcement.
Right. And then final question, is there a state mandated metric that we utilize when determining whether or not a SEP is taking place in a disadvantaged community, or is it up to our discretion to look at a variety of different criteria? Is there a specific metric that we use when we're evaluating whether or not a community is disadvantaged for purposes of a SEP, or are there, do we have discretion about how we define a disadvantaged community?
No, some metrics are defined in the enforcement policy and in the SEP policy. And they look at income, and they look at the size. For instance, if it was a smaller community that the facility was servicing, then those factor into whether or not they would be considered servicing a disadvantaged community. But Region 7 has a number of disadvantaged communities, so we've been able to take advantage of that. It is a voluntary process, though, so the discharger must volunteer to do, mm-hmm, it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chair Seton, I do know years ago the state used to have a cleanup and abatement account where they would collect these penalties because High Desert Water District did get a $500,000 grant towards their septic project. Mm-hmm. From that amount, that account.
Was that funded through these enforcement action liabilities that were being paid?
They didn't. They received a $500,000 grant from the cleanup and abatement account, and I was told that account by the state was where they would collect penalties.
Got it.
And then disperse it to various projects.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments?
I do have a question, not necessarily for you, but on several other presentations I heard about, you presented that we engage with the community outreach. I'm curious on how do we do this? Is this through mailers? Is this through community events? I know that we're very short-staffed, so I'm curious. And one of the reasons is that because I have met with community members of the Salton Sea and most recently the Bombay Beach area. And they do have some concerns that they express, not knowing that I'm on this board. I go in another capacity. But one of the concerns was those stacks. I believe that you mentioned that prevents
the air wind?
The hay bales, yes. So that was one of the issues that was brought up. I've been there at Bombay Beach Community Center, and actually the Bombay Beach. I've gone there 4 times. Each time they bring that up. And they think that some farmer just dropped them off, dumped them. I'm wondering, how do we disseminate information?
You know, when we get complaints, and we have gotten a complaint about that, and we followed up on it, staff from the NPDS unit, Logan's staff went out and did a site inspection, and we also contacted, I think it's CNRA that is doing that vegetation enhancement project, and we talked with them about how they are maintaining their hay bales and how often they're inspected after rain events. So we have followed up on complaints that we've gotten with regard to the public. How do we engage with them? They, in many instances, they do submit a complaint. In some instances, in other programs, for instance, in Angela's program, they give out flyers, letting the public know what is going on at that particular site. And whenever we get information that indicates that the community has concerns, we do make an effort to follow up on it. Now, if you would like to know the specifics of the inspection, I guess Logan would be the better person to answer that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
If there's no other comments, I'd like to thank staff for those presentations. And we look forward to seeing the follow-up in June 25. Okie doke. All right, agenda item 14, we will now hear a report from the executive officer, Michael Placentia.
It's still morning. For two more minutes.
Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board, and members of the public. I am Michael Placentia, Executive Officer. I have a few updates for the board. The office renovations are proceeding. Phase one is complete, and we are proceeding with phase two, which is the renovation of the boardroom in our office building. Completion of all four phases of the office renovation is estimated for late February. In October, Water Board staff attended a virtual meeting hosted by the California Natural Resources Agency and Salton Sea Authority, which gave an update on the North Lake Pilot Demonstration Project. The meeting presented an overview of the project and invited the community to provide feedback. The project involves the construction of an approximately 156-acre lake at the north end of the Salton Sea, which will create a shallow and deep-water habitat for fish and birds while also creating recreational opportunities. Proposition 68 allowed $19.25 million in funding for the project, which is expected to be linked to a larger North Lake in the future. In November, I approved a $30,000 settlement agreement with Kent SeaTech Core Fish Farm for bacteria indicator and oil and grease violations. The permittee is now in compliance with permit requirements. I have an update regarding our staffing vacancies. The State Board has allowed us to proceed with filling four vacancies. We are at various stages of the recruitment and selection process for these positions, including posting advertisements, reviewing applications, and scheduling interviews. So I hope to have more to share soon. This concludes my report.
Thank you. Any questions for the executive officer? Okay, hearing none, I appreciate your report. And item 15, do any of the board members have anything to discuss?
I just have a comment. I was wondering if we should add an agenda item called future agenda items, that if any board ever thought of something that they may want brought to a future board meeting, that they could bring it up, or it could just be part of this board member comments.
Yeah, I would certainly encourage, I suppose, folks to bring up any desired topics during this time.
Because I would, if we could get the, I think it's Patrick O'Dowd, he's the Salton Sea Authority, if we could get him on the agenda and come and give us a presentation and give us an update on what the, he's doing for the Salton Sea, I think would be greatly appreciated.
Study session?
Just, it could be either, both.
Thank you, Board Member Music. I can work with staff on engaging with him. In addition to that, we can add language. I did believe this, the language in item 15 was an invitation to introduce suggestions for future agenda items, but we can add specific language to encourage that.
You have just a comment. As far as the New River Improvement Project goes, I'm not sure if I mentioned this to you yet, Michael, that Jose Angel, who works now as a consultant, I think, on that project, was a retired EO from this region, so he's got many, many years on the New River project, or just the New River itself. Anyway, he asked if we ever wanted a tour, just to let him know. I told him next year sometime, and he asked me to give you his email address. And so I'll do that.
Thank you, Board Member Wright. Happy to follow up with him as well.
Thank you. Oh, and one more thing. I learned some stuff about you on the news advisory release that the State Board put out. Stuff that I didn't know is very interesting. You are definitely qualified for the job.
I mean, we did hire him, so I should hope so.
Nice to know we made it.
Yeah, right.
This is stuff that wasn't in his app.
Glad that PR is really working. sorry. Any other comments? Yeah. And in addition to Board Member Music's comment too, earlier comment regarding moving our board meetings to around the region, I also have always appreciated the field trips that staff has coordinated for us. Certainly reflecting on the project at the southern end of the Salton Sea. When we saw that last year, my interest was piqued by the Sunnylands Recycled Water Reclamation Facility, to see how that's all used. So I would just, you know, request that staff and the executive officer be kind of keeping in mind if anything would make a good field trip to kind of broaden our horizons and show us what some of the stuff we're doing, what's happening out there in the field. So with that, I will move on to the chair's report. The chair's meeting was canceled for this month, so we will not be convening again until January, so I do not have any updates to report out. Council, do we have any closed session items?
Nothing today.
Awesome. Okie doke. Then, with that, the next meeting is tentatively scheduled for February 11th, 2024 at 9 a.m., hopefully no longer tentative since we adopted that meeting date. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you for all those that attended.